Radioactive is made possible in part by the Alamoosuc Lodge, a bed and breakfast with indoor and outdoor space for weddings, receptions, retreats, and meetings. On the shore of Alamoosuc Lake in Orland, 469-6393 or alamoosuclodge.com. And by the members of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Ellsworth, on the Bucksport Road, with Sunday services at 10:30 a.m., affirming and promoting respect for the interdependent web of existence and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for March 24th, 2005. Today, the Teamsters Local 340 speaks of the complaint they filed against the company DHL and a response about the $1 million offered to Perry, who is voting on an LNG terminal on Monday, and an update on the genetically modified foods controversy in Maine.
For the past 12 years, Black Bear Courier and Brewer has been contracted to provide drivers for DHL, formerly Airborne, a global shipping company with offices around the country. Earlier this year, the drivers joined the Teamsters Union, and a few weeks later, DHL failed to renew their contract with Black Bear, resulting in 23 people losing their jobs in Brewer and another 25 being fired in Presque Isle. DHL instead awarded the contract to a non-unionized company, which only rehired six of the laid-off drivers. Some of the drivers reportedly were questioned about their union affiliation during interviews with the new company. DHL denies responsibility for the layoff, saying it was a business decision made by Black Bear Courier. Union reps and former employees say the subcontracting arrangement has allowed for this to happen, and they are challenging the layoffs with a complaint to the National Labor Relations Board. Joining us today are Local 340 President Jim Carson and Political Coordinator and Field Representative for Local 340 of the Teamsters, Jimmy Cook. He is at the site, at the DHL site in Brewer, where the laid-off workers started picketing on Monday. Welcome to both of you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
DHL Representative Jonathan Baker, a spokesperson for that company, has been quoted in the Bangor Daily News in recent days denying that there's any connection between the union activity and DHL's failure to renew their contract with Black Bear Courier. Can each of you comment on what evidence you believe that there is that there's a connection between the two other than just the timing of the events?
Yeah, there's some really obvious evidence. This is Jim Carson from Portland. Some really obvious evidence. First of all, these employees essentially built this company for the last 13 years while working with Black Bear Security. They know this business inside and out in that area. They have had a successful track record of being able to carry out the functions of the business in a profitable way. And when the new subcontractor, this Ridebaum Express out of Pennsylvania, came in, they gave no consideration to these employees. In fact, they were forced to even give them applications, in which they only gave throughout three applications for 25 employees. They refused to give these people interviews for the job, and they made many anti-union statements to the employees who did go over and turn in applications that we actually produced for them from the blank copies that we'd gotten from Ridebaum to have them fill them out. And so it's prima facie evidence that they're in the not granting applications, not granting interviews, and making anti-union statements, that all this business about letting go of the former employees and hiring these new employees has everything to do with the union.
And Jimmy Cook, you're up in Brewer at the DHL site, and we hear horns in the background. I'm assuming that there's still a picket line up there?
Oh, things are going great. We're doing this a couple times a day. We come on every morning, have our cup of coffee. Then we come up here at about 8:45, and we stay here till noon. Then we go have our union lunch break, and then we strategize, and we come back here at about 3:30 every afternoon, and we stay here till all the drivers come back around 6. And right now, I'm just watching this yellow cab was loading up with packages, and I'm not sure, but I think he's going up to deliver some packages. It's quite an operation. We have many other union locals that are here right now joining us. J.R. Gibson, president of IBEW, I think it's 2327. We have some people from the mill that are up here today, from the machinists. We have everybody. The support's just fantastic, and it really means a lot. And we just sit here and watch, and we're really looking at quite a cluster that's going on up here, but the horns are going all the time.
Great. Jim Carson, president of the Teamsters Local 340, can you explain the complaint that's being then filed with the National Labor Relations Board? There's a couple of things that you're outlining. One is for the reinstatement of these 28 workers, and also it's to declare DHL as a dual employer. Can you talk about those requests and then the national implications of that as well?
Yes, I can. The charge that's being filed with the National Labor Relations Board has to do with the fact that Ribom Express has refused to consider and or refused to hire individuals who are employed formally by Black Bear Couriers because of their union affiliation and or union activities. We're also asking under this charge for relief under 10J of the National Labor Relations Act, which is the section of the act that asks for injunctive relief. And the reason for that, of course, is we have employees. Excuse me.
There's one of your supporters. So
the reason for that is because we want to try to get this relief as quickly as possible. The granting of injunctive relief by the board would essentially return the former workforce back to their jobs with back pay, and require Ribom Express to recognize and bargain with the union. So this, in essence, when you're asking for injunctive relief, your complaint is essentially going to the top of the pile, and that's where it needs to be, because we have people on the street who are being denied the ability to make a living right now, and we need to try and get a decision as quickly as possible.
How soon
This is not an isolated thing, by the way, with regards to the second part of this whole thing about DHL
being a dual employer. Let me ask you about the first part just real quickly.
Sure.
What is the timeline for that? Is there any idea of when these folks will be able to get back to work?
We believe about 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, go ahead with the second part of the
question.
The second
part of this thing, as far as the dual employer part of it is concerned, is this is not the first time, by the way, that this has happened with an independent contractor, with DHL being behind the whole thing. It happened twice before in New Hampshire in the last 5 years, where the workforce was let go and a new workforce was brought on. But in that case, the evidence wasn't there to be able to prove that this has been done solely for the purpose of trying to bust the union. In this case, the situation is different. We do have the evidence in this case to be able to prove this, I believe. And so, you know, DHL, who haven't had these 369 independent contractors around the country, is essentially trying to do the same thing all over the country. There's about 50 of these independent contractors around the country that have been organized by other teams to locals in the country. And we expect that DHL, and the one common factor behind all this is DHL. You know, there's 369 different independent contractors. There's only one DHL. And the same activity is going to go on at these other independent contractors that's gone on here and that has gone on previously, all at the behest of DHL. So we're saying that DHL has got their hand in the cookie jar here, and then we're hoping to catch it in the cookie jar and prove that there's a dual employer relationship here so that other employees and other local unions around the country won't have to go through the same experience that our people are having to go through here.
Did DHL ever have their own employees? It sounds like primarily, if not exclusively, the way that they actually transport the packages that they're hired to transport is through all kinds of different subcontractors. And Black Bear, at least, only did business with DHL. They drove DHL trucks. They wore DHL uniforms. So I guess I'm wondering if there was a time at which there was a move to just hire subcontractors, and if there was any reason for that other than being able to pay less and not have to pay benefits and not doing.
No, the reason that DHL has chosen the model that they've chosen in the United States is because it allows them to be able to build out a national network in a very inexpensive way. The people who work for them under these IC contracts and who work for these independent contractors are paid roughly around $10 an hour without benefits, without health insurance, without pension, without 401k plans or any of that. It's a very cheap way to build out a national network. They only give these independent contractors one-year contracts. For DHL to have blamed this thing on Black Bear Security is absolutely absurd. Black Bear Security had nothing to do with this whatsoever. This was a DHL Ribom plan from the beginning, and they have carried it out just the way we thought that they would. So, you know, this is all about DHL, really, in the end of the day. Ribom happens to be the contractor who's in the squeeze at the moment, but this is a DHL operation. Now, DHL, in the United States, is a result of a merger between Airborne Express and DHL that took place in September of 2003. And there were about 8,000 unionized employees at Airborne at the time that this merger took place. Those employees are still in place in various places around the country. But DHL decided, after they entered into this merger, to build out this national network through these independent contractors.
So, in fact, if DHL is established as a dual employer, DHL itself could be become or be subject to unionization?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Rather than piecemeal.
Exactly. And that's, of course, the goal of our organization. Our international organization has the goal of organizing DHL's employees nationally. There's about 10,000 DHL employees working for independent contractors in the United States right now. But within 10 years, we believe there'll be at least 100,000 DHL employees in direct competition with the union company UPS, with the union company to be FedEx Ground. So what we're trying to do is to create a level playing field here so that all three of these major package delivery companies are under union contracts, under similar wages and benefits and so on, to level the playing field so that there's equal competition.
DHL is also claiming in the Bangor Daily News article that, I believe it was the one that came out on Wednesday, that they have 40 of their own employees that are actually DHL employees who have been unionized by the Teamsters, and that they have an amicable relationship. Are these 40 people that are left over from the Airborne days, or how do they have staff already there that are unionized?
I don't know what they're referring to there, but there are different DHL locations around the country at the air hubs and so on that are unionized, that did manage to get contracts and so on. And because DHL ran those operations, they did not have an independent contractor in those cases. They actually ran those operations, and it was DHL itself that was the company. And those places have been organized, and the Teamsters do represent people in those various locations. So, you know, that doesn't say anything, you know, for DHL. It says something for the Teamsters that we were able to go in and organize these places because DHL apparently treated the employees so horribly that these people were amenable to being organized.
And they can't just let those employees go quite as easily as they can just not renew a contract and with.
No, that's right. Once the union certify, they have certification rights, and the employer has an obligation under the National Labor Relations Act to bargain in good faith with the union for a new contract.
I'd like to bring Jimmy Cook back in. You were involved in the organizing of DHL workers in Maine just right before the canceling of that contract. Can you offer any of your perspectives?
Well, I look at it like this, and when Mr. Baker spoke the other day in his rebuttal for the company, the PR guy, for one thing, it wasn't Ribom that brought in Mr. Baker. It wasn't
Ribom.
Right. It wasn't Ribom's PR guy. It was DHL's PR guy. And the last thing he said is that we stay out of this. And this is between Black Bear and Ribom. It's not between us. And this is the quote that he said right here. It says, "These independent contractors have the right to hire or fire whoever they want." And that just made it go, that's right. They can do that, and it's not right. You know, he was saying exactly what I believe that we're fighting against. And you know, we organize these guys, and it's not me. These guys did it. And there's only five up north in Presque Isle and 23 down here. And these 28.
Okay, so those numbers were reported
right,
incorrectly.
Right.
Thank you for that.
Sure. These people down here and up there, you know, in Presque Isle, they're just hanging together. And, you know, we know for a fact that the people inside right now at Ribom, the supervisor's saying, you know, these guys are just going to be here a couple of days. They're going to go away. Don't worry about it. I know that's what they said. I know. And I mean, all that does is make you stay out here even longer. I mean, they're not going to break the union. They're not going to break labor in this case. No way.
Do they... And I don't know if you would have had, we did not have an opportunity when we were there on Monday to ask anybody from DHL this, but have you heard any reasons given for their failure to renew the contract? What are they stating is their reason that they didn't renew the contract after 12 years? If it wasn't because the workers at Black Bear were unionized, then what was the reason?
Well, what they're claiming is that Black Bear had asked for more money, you know, to renew the contract, and that they didn't want to grant that, the additional money that the independent contractor was asking for. But that is just complete baloney, I can tell you that right now, because that's exactly what they wanted to be able to say, is to be able to say that, look, this Black Bear asked for so much money, we just couldn't possibly grant it to him. I can tell you right now that DHL has an investment in Ridebond that they've put in just this week to try and make this business get off the ground of at least $120,000, which they would never have done for Black Bear Security. I guarantee you that. And this guy, this Ridebond Express being up there from Pennsylvania, he already has two IC contracts with DHL in Pennsylvania where there are organizational attempts going on down there right now. He has a well-known reputation for his anti-union stance on things. And so I think DHL purposely reached out for this guy in Pennsylvania and brought him to Maine to deal with this situation because they felt like they had the guy who was the junkyard dog that they needed.
Okay. And we're going to need to wrap it up here in a second, but Jimmy Cook up there in Brewer, if anybody wants to come and ask you some questions or perhaps join the picket line, where are you exactly?
I am standing right across the street from the action, and everybody's huddled around the car right now listening to what's going on the radio. Yeah, it's great. It's just these guys are doing so well. And one thing I just want to add is that on Saturday at Brewer High School parking lot, we're organizing what we're going to call a family picketing day. And we're going to have a couple of grills out there. I think we're going to have Master Contraption from Bar Harbor coming up, and I think they're going to be playing. And we're going to have from 10 o'clock till 2, and just a show that it's not just union people, but it's working families.
Okay.
All in this together.
And you're actually located across the street from the Brewer High School, which is sort of behind the big Shop and Save Plaza there in Brewer.
On Parkway right. South, correct, okay. Right off 395. You, believe me, you won't be able to miss us.
Would you like to leave a contact and information for people who want to get more information?
Yeah, they can give me a call on my cell at 756-2634 or call the CLC and Jack McKay, because the CLC has been playing an instrumental role in supporting us, and that would be 989-4141.
Great. Thanks very much, Jimmy Cook and Jim Carson with Teamsters Local 340.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This Monday, March 28th, the town of Perry will cast a vote which appears to have the ability to stop the development of a liquefied natural gas terminal on Passamaquoddy tribal land at Pleasant Point. In 1986, the town of Perry annexed the land in question to the tribe with the stipulation that if there was commercial development proposed for the land, the town would have a vote. This is referred to as Article 40. When it became apparent to developers Quaddy Bay LLC and the Tribal Council that this requirement was legally binding, they have engaged in vigorous lobbying of town citizens, organizations, and selectmen. After initially offering $340,000 a year, this week Quaddy Bay LLC and the Tribal Council at Pleasant Point has offered the town $1 million a year for the life of the terminal. Additionally, in an extensively distributed press release, Quaddy Bay LLC partner Donald Smith has accused the opposition to the project of being supported by, quote, wealthy, selfish interests in Canada. Those opposed to the LNG at Pleasant Point and surrounding communities point out that they have raised a little over $11,000 total and cannot believe that this out-of-state entity is making these accusations. They say the $1 million offered to the town amounts to a bribe. Additionally, the Passamaquoddy tribe at Indian Township has passed a resolution asserting its right to have a vote in any activity that would infringe on their rights in the waters that would be affected, and said they explicitly do not support the LNG project until a vote at Indian Township has occurred. We hear briefly from Vera Francis of the Passamaquoddy in response to these latest developments. Can you talk about the timing of this $1 million offer a year to Perry, if they accept the project?
Right. Well, that certainly gives evidence to it being a bribe.
Let's talk about this $1 million offer that Quaddy Bay LLC has just offered to the town of Perry, and So this tactic and then the tactic of painting the Three Nation Resistance as being backed by, quote, wealthy selfish interests in
right.
Canada.
It certainly proves one thing. It's not an internal tribal matter. Once again, Meredith, and I've said this from the beginning, I think it was the first thing I ever said to you, it's a forcible land grab. But I would add that it's a forcible land grab of prime collective property. Most people outside of the reservation call that prime real estate. So we're talking about prime collective property. And it's a land grab by corporations, not no little corporation. This is a corporation with an army of lawyers. They happen to have, like most corporations, obviously no conscience and no care about who gets in their way. They have no qualms about, you know, making public the method of their inducements. I mean, no matter how you spend the million-dollar inducement, no matter how you call it, I mean, it is happening just before the vote. A bribe is a bribe.
Well, it's going to take the moral courage of Perry voters to stand by their values for independence, that's for sure. But more, a vote to reject LNG to prove that Maine cannot be sold or exchanged.
Okay, and joining us by phone, we have Camden attorney Lynn Williams with some breaking news about a petition that she, as an attorney, along with attorney Phil Warden, are assisting six Perry residents in this petition as a request to the DA to investigate the money that's being offered to the town of Perry by the supporters and promoters of an LNG plant. Lynn, thank you for joining us. Okay, let's see. Lynn, can you hear me? Okay, well, as Matt is working on that, I'll read a bit from the press release that was sent out this afternoon as part of this. And Lynn, if you can hear me at any point, go ahead and jump in. Northeast Harbor attorney Phil Warden, acting on behalf of Perry resident Gary Geisinger and five additional residents of the town of Perry, today sent a letter to Washington County District Attorney Michael Povich requesting that Povich investigate Quaddy Bay LLC's recent financial offer to the town of Perry and whether the offer violated Maine's bribery statute. Quaddy Bay recently offered the voters of the town of Perry $1 million per year for 30 years if they vote to approve the proposed LNG plant at LNG terminal at Pleasant Point. According to Warden's letter, he is, quote, unaware of any precedent in which a developer has offered to make such a brazen monetary payment to voters in order to influence their vote. On behalf of his clients, Warden expressed concern about the offer itself, and I believe we have Lynn Williams, attorney Lynn Williams, who's also part of this, joining us by phone now to tell us a little bit about why they oppose this. Lynn?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us.
We our concern is that this offer, which is now $1 million times 30, is really coming very close to the election, to Monday's election, very close. And it's also, it's not an offer that's being made to other towns. And that, to us, makes it suspicious. You know, Perry is not the only town in the region who would be impacted by an LNG plant. And so, you know, the combination of the size of the offer, the closeness to the election, and the fact that only the town of Perry is being offered this money made us concerned about that.
And you're hoping that they that there will be an investigation launched into this, just
yes.
Whether or not it's bribery.
What we're asking, we're not saying it is bribery or it's not bribery. Essentially, what we're asking is that Michael Povich, the DA, initiate a grand jury investigation into the matter.
What is, just in a nutshell, because we just have a minute here, but what is there a quick way that you can define the legal definition of a bribe for us? What does bribery mean?
Well, I don't have the statute in front of me, but essentially it's, in layperson's language, it's probably good I don't have the statute, offering a financial inducement in order to either influence the vote of an elected official, which is not this, or the vote in general, you know, the voters vote. And we contend that this may, in fact, be the illegal attempt to influence the voters of Perry on
Monday.
Okay.
And what is the timeline on that?
That's up to Michael. There's no statutory timeline, and, you know, he has received it, and we'll wait and see what his response is, whatever happens on Monday.
And where can people get more information, Lynn, if they want to find out more about this or follow up on his response?
They can email me at lwilliamslaw@earthlink.net.
Okay, great.
Or 236-8485.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us.
Bye.
And that was Camden attorney Lynn Williams. And if you didn't get that information, you can contact us right after we go off the air. And we have one final real quick update to bring you here to tell us a little bit about an issue that we'll be covering much more extensively next week. The effort to ban genetically modified organisms in communities around Maine is Rob Fish of GE Maine.
G.E. Freeman.
G.E. Freeman, I believe. Okay. We're all right. Rob, are you on the line? Rob Fish.
Hi, Meredith. How's it going?
This is Amy, but Meredith's here, too. We just have maybe 1 minute tops, Rob, but we're going to be talking with you a lot more next week. If you could just very briefly give people a little taste of what it is that's been happening in this effort to ban GE-free or genetically modified organisms in communities around the state.
Okay, the towns of Kennebunk and Kennebunkport were set to vote on the issue at their town meeting in June. The Department of Agriculture, at the last possible minute, sent a letter to the towns stating that such an ordinance would be unenforceable because there are best management practices for genetically modified organisms. This is not the case, unfortunately. We have spoken with the current and former chairs of the Ag Committee, as well as folks at MOSCA, and everybody agrees that there are no best management practices for genetically modified organisms, and that the department is wrong on this, and this letter is a scare tactic. This letter is advisory. There's a lot more information on our website, gefreemaine.org, but we're asking people to call the Department of Agriculture, to call their state reps and senators, asking them to hold the Department of Agriculture to the feet of the fire on this, as well as approach their own selectmen and ask them to pass a resolution or an ordinance regulating genetically modified organisms in their town.
Okay, and we're going to have to leave it at that for this week, Rob, but we will be talking with you quite a bit more next week, and we've also interviewed the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture, and we'll bring you much more coverage on this next week, Radioactive, Thursday at 4. And you have been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown.
And I'm Meredith DeFrancesco. Matt Murphy engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support.
You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@maineindymedia.org. And you can listen to or download our archived programs on our website, radioactivenews.org.
Thanks for listening and acting. Join us next week at 4.
Radioactive is made possible in part by Artisan Builders, providing environmental design, construction, and renovation for homeowners and local businesses since 1992. 525-7740.